Welcome to the Ringer Podcast Network. It's Liz Kelly. This week, we launched a new show on the network called The Ringer Fantasy Football Show. Coming from the guys who brought you the Dantasy Football Podcast, Danny Heifetz, Danny Kelly, and Craig Horlbeck will guide you through the fantasy football season, providing analysis on big picture conversations like weekly matchups, trades, and daily fantasy. The show will run every Monday and Wednesday throughout the rest of the summer, and we'll be helping you through the regular season as well. So follow and listen to the first episode of the Ringer Fantasy Football Podcast, out now for free on Spotify.
Hello and welcome back to the Stadio Podcast, The Ringer SC. I'm Issa Kwonga.
I'm Ryan Hun.
Ryan, how's your birthday going?
It's great. I'm doing a podcast. Everything I ever dreamed of.
Sorry to drop you in it. Had to mention that's your birthday.
It is my birthday. Thanks.
All good. Wow, amazing. Look how far you've come in just a year. Amazing.
Well, I'm not a year old. My first birthday. Thanks, man.
All good. Good times. Good times.
We're doing a mailbag today. We're recording it a little bit earlier. We're recording this Wednesday morning, Berlin time. Yes, we're going to miss some of the games. We're going to miss Liverpool's presentation of the trophy. There was some quite big news in the NWSL this week with the announcement of another expansion team. So there's been two expansion teams announced in the last couple of weeks. Rathing Louisville, which I assume is it's supposed to be Rathing, right? I'm not supposed to say Racing Louisville.
You probably are.
Oh, what? But it's Rathing. Rathing, yeah. Santander.
Ryan, like, look at the demographic and the context. You really think it's going to be Rathing? You really think that's going to happen?
All right, Racing Louisville.
Okay, there we go. Was that so hard?
Yeah, actually.
It was.
It was nice knowing you're Rathing Louisville. But Angel City, LA's expansion team. This is amazing.
That is super cool.
The people involved in the co-founding of it are unbelievable. So it's Natalie Portman, Julie Ehrman, Serena Williams and her husband and their daughter, apparently. Alexis Olympia shareholder. She's going to be director of football.
Incredible.
Jessica Chastain, America Ferrara, Jennifer Garner, Eva Longoria, and Lily Singh, it says on the FIFA website, are just some of the non-soccer figures involved.
Didn't love 14, that.
14 former US women's national team players are also involved in the project, including Mia Hamm, Julie Foudy, Lauren Cheney Holiday, and Abby Wambach.
That's so cool. Didn't I love most about that though? Jessica Chastain is in it. Like, if she's in anything, it's good. It's just like anything. Yeah, it's like the watermark.
Yeah, it's the Steve Buscemi rule.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. Perfect. Yeah, if I see Netflix, I click. I don't even care. Yeah.
Football in Los Angeles is getting really, really interesting. I mean, the name, Angel City.
It's so good. It's so obvious. You wonder why it hadn't been done before. One thing quickly. Imagine the merch.
Oh, the merch, man.
Merch, so
you've got LAFC in the MLS, who have obviously come with this amazing branding and amazing club ethos. For a new club, and Angel City down the road as well.
Angel City is brilliant.
Although it says the club, it's the placeholder name until the official club name is announced.
I
don't like this. Just call it Angel City.
Yeah, yeah, it's done.
And be done with it.
Let's start a campaign now. Yep. Go and vote. Go and vote. We'll start like a year long Stadio referendum on Twitter, and we'll just get people to keep going and vote, keep driving them to the link.
The only name that I will acknowledge other than Angel City is if they call it The Chronic.
Oh my God. Do you know what?
We've got The Chronic away this weekend.
Whatever they call it, I'm going to call them Angel City.
Yeah.
In my heart or on the podcast, like let's say they call them whatever, the something something starboard or whatever. No, I'll be like, oh, Angel
City. The something something starboard.
Yeah, you know, they'll call it something like that, something like corporate and sensible.
No, I don't know. You know, Angel City's good.
Let's hype it.
Racing Louisville will always be Rathing Louisville to me.
Yeah, well, there we go.
And Angel City will always be Angel City to me. I think it's amazing. It sounds amazing. Great project. Really good time for women's football on the whole, I think.
Mm.
In general, obviously, there were some problems we've mentioned before in the Women's Super League in England. But anyway, questions?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's move on to questions. Okay, first one. From the brilliant Jasmina Schweimler at Jazz Schweimler on Twitter. Anyone who wants to follow women's football from a European perspective, Jazz is the Frauen Bundesliga Don. She said, when are we going to eat cupcakes?
Oh my goodness. As soon as you are in Berlin again, and you are our guest, our esteemed guest. So yeah, Jazz, when you're next in town, let's go do it.
Right, let's move on to some football. From Neve Dunphy, she said, who would your 2020 Ballon d'Or have been if it had gone ahead this year? A few other people sent us this as well. So obviously, the Ballon d'Or has been cancelled this year.
Yeah, that is cancel culture. You see?
Yeah, but football sometimes is so weird. Why this year? I know, I get it, that everything's a little bit all over the place, but like, really? Now?
But aren't you happy that cancel culture has actually worked? Like, it's, I've never actually seen it until now. I was like, wow, actually.
I'm going to cancel you.
Promises, promises. All my best material gets cancelled on this podcast.
Oh!
But yeah, the sad thing about this is there is someone out there, Ryan, who started this season with the quiet goal of winning a Ballon d'Or, or at least getting a podium finish, and desperately worked towards it. And actually, you know what's really sad about this? Could have had an Atalanta player in the top three this year. Could have. Could have.
No, I think he may have been nominated, but I don't think he would have
name
been
recognition. But maybe even top 30, maybe like a final 30 finish. And it's a big deal.
Maybe a shortlist, yeah.
Yeah, for us, and don't get me wrong, for us, I mean, I know that Ballon d'Or is a bit of a joke to some people, and it kind of is a bit arbitrary. At the same time, if you're part of a team that is having a historically great season, you could have seen maybe Papu Gomez and Ilicic both in the top 30. And that would have been really amazing for them. That's something to kind of, you know, tell the relatives and the grandkids and boast about and be like, wow, we did something really special this year. And it's kind of a bit sad that it's not there for those people who don't normally get recognized. In terms of who would be the winner this year, everyone on Twitter was pretty much like Lewandowski would have been the guy. And I can't really see a better candidate.
No, I can't. I think it was nailed on, really.
Anyone that saw, especially anyone that saw Bayern in that ropey early season form, anyone that saw them knew that he was basically keeping them afloat. And if he'd been injured at any point, I reckon Bayern could have finished third or fourth.
Yeah, I mean, obviously a lot of the Ballon d'Or stuff is tied up into Champions League as well.
Yeah.
And things like that. But I think, yeah, I'd be hard pressed to think of someone.
Because it wasn't just goal scoring this year. Lewandowski did more than just goal scoring. Like he actually led the line, properly led it, like was an outlet and scored in all the important matches. Like he did everything right this year.
What about the women? Because obviously the Ada Hegerberg has been injured.
Okay, so the outstanding player in Germany was Pernille Harder by a distance. In the Women's Super League, Miedemar was outstanding. Although it would be weird
Beth
to give
England.
It'd be difficult not to give it to a Chelsea player, given how good they were. And Beth England was the most decisive player consistently. There's about three players in the Chelsea team who could have been a top. There was like a top 30. There were three players in the Chelsea team who could have been a top 30, I think. Three or four, but Beth England was the best of that lot, I think. And from the very first game, actually, I think she scored the winner or the opener in the first game against Spurs, I think.
I mean, Beth England was the Women's Super League Player of the Season this season. Emma Hayes was Manager of the Season. I wonder whether Chelsea not being in the Champions League might have affected Beth England's potential Ballon d'Or thing.
Yeah, but she was so good.
You could probably make an argument for Lucy Bronze actually as well.
Oh, because of the end of last year and the start of this, it's always the
And also if they go deep in the Champions League, Lyon. If they win the Champions League, for example, I think you'd probably see someone from Lyon win it.
Yeah, although weirdly they've been not more fragile this year. Well, there's been a greater sign of. Well, they just bought Sarah Bjorkgrenaster too, haven't they? So they were looking. Like their dominance might be easing, they buy a player like that and they shore up all those problems. Okay, I still think Beth England is my preferred choice.
Can you imagine then though, you would have had potentially a Ballon d'Or winner who's struggling to get into the England team regularly.
Has that ever happened before? In either the men's or women's game?
Yeah, let's not get started on Phil Neville.
Let's not get started. But I mean, by God.
Do you want to move on to another question?
Yeah, let's do it.
Ahead of the Liverpool-Chelsea game, you'll be hearing this after the Liverpool-Chelsea game. So congratulations to the team that won or drew with the other team. This one from Matthew De Mattea. Lovely name. What can Chelsea do, if anything, to seriously compete with City and Liverpool next year? Can any upgrade get them there? or are they destined to compete for third or fourth in the table? Now, do you mind if I jump in here quickly? Because obviously Chelsea have made some massive signings already. They look more and more likely to sign Kai Havertz.
Yeah.
Something that we weren't massively in favour of. But I think we said it would be a good signing for Chelsea because Kai Havertz is a good signing for anyone.
Right.
However, we didn't really like the fit and that we would prefer him to stay at Leverkusen, at least for another season or two. Speaking as a non-Chelsea fan, there are some deeply troubling rumours that they're actually going to go after Oblak and involve Kepa in some kind of deal. There's usually one team that comes out flying in the transfer window before anyone's really kind of got the shoes on.
And it's normally Chelsea.
Okay, they've signed Timo Werner. They've signed Ziyech. They're potentially going to sign Kai Havertz.
Strong.
Some of the youngsters that were coming through this season, that pushes them into essentially the second string.
Yeah.
Or rotational roles. I'd be interested to see how they cope with that. The move to that system this season, where you saw a lot of the academy graduates come through, was really interesting. And it brought with it a lot of goodwill for Frank Lampard. I remember us talking about it early on in the season that even though they were losing games or defensively not so solid, they'd switched that identity around where it had bought them loads of time. Like I think Chelsea could have finished sixth this season.
Yeah.
And there would be no talk about Frank Lampard's job. So it'd be interesting to see how some of those players who have played more of a role this season will feature or how they will cope with maybe not being as key as they had been this season in certain games.
What's funny about that though is that I think for them, if you said to them, would you take that? If you look at the way it was going to be 18 months ago, would you take the situation now? I think they might still take that in a weird way.
Mm.
Because one thing you noticed in the semi-final, I noticed certainly, was that range of attacking options off that bench, especially now with the five subs. It's so exciting what you could do. Like Chelsea could be the most confusing attacking team in the Premier League next year. They have the most confusing assortment of configurations. Like they can come at you any which way.
Mm.
Any which way. Like, I mean, imagine what Guardiola would do with that forward line, for example, with those options. I mean, he doesn't have that range of attacking options. But that diversity of attacking options, it's the broadest in the league, in the Premier League. It's incredible, actually. If Atleti sell Oblak, that's wild and would be a ridiculous choice. And if they sell Oblak, it's because they've got debt issues. But you don't sell Oblak and replace them, Kepa. You just don't. There's not a goalkeeper in the world actually replaced with Oblak in that system for Atleti. There's not one that improves it.
I mean, Oblak is, I think, the best men's keeper in the world currently.
And I don't think you replace him with a... You don't replace that guy. Unless it's... The only other keeper you'd swap in for Oblak and maintain those super performances would be, I think, Alisson.
I'd maybe throw in Ter Stegen.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Maybe Ter Stegen on this.
You know what I'd love to see, actually, but Athletic would never do it, is maybe see Kepa go back to Athletic.
Oh, right.
Unai Simon go to Athleti.
Oh, my goodness.
Have a three-team trade.
Oh, wow. We haven't done that yet.
There you go, NBA fans.
Three-team trades.
Oh, we need to do a fake trade soon, actually, because that was fun that time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think Chelsea, if they continue to add players, which I imagine they probably will do, I assume they're going to sell a number of players this season as well. Then, I know we mentioned it briefly the other day, and I don't want to kind of get hyperbolic about this, but like, I do have a sneaking suspicion about City next season.
This is the thing about this league, right? Liverpool have been outstanding, absolutely. And also other teams have not had their act together. And this feels like 2015-16, where a lot of teams were broken at the same time.
Mm.
And these teams that were broken this year will not be that broken next year. If Chelsea, to answer the question, eventually buy a centre-back and a defensive midfield or defensively-minded midfield, because they've still got Billy Gilmour to come back. He's still a bit young. He's
still got Kante.
Yeah, I know, but I'm thinking like, but Gilmour and Kante is great, but you need a third player of that kind of heft. You need a third defensive player, I think.
If they got someone like Thomas Partey, it'd be game over. Well, not game right. over, but they would be like, they'd be right. a problem.
If they got Partey, a centre-back, a fast centre-back that can cover that space in behind that the attackers would leave, and then a new goalkeeper, then they're cooking with gas. At that point, they are like...
Yeah, I don't like that. I don't like that.
That's very dangerous if they do that.
It's very Bane.
Yeah.
It's very big Bane energy, that.
And they know what they're doing.
Just like, how do you beat that?
With difficulty. I think Liverpool will be the only constant. I do think they will be. I think they will be only because their rotation is outstanding. And with the addition of the extra two subs, it will get even better.
Yeah, I think that's a key thing for Liverpool.
That's gold for Klopp. That is gold for Klopp. And now it means players like Minamino can become more integrated and he'll get more minutes, more time. He'll start being more decisive.
Mm.
I just think it's... they're the gold standard and United struggle with the depth finish. I'm just calling that now. That's not a big shout. United's problem will be depth.
Yeah, absolutely.
No question.
There's such a huge drop-off after that starting 11 for United.
Yeah, it's massive. It's probably the biggest drop-off of those teams, those big teams, I would say.
Let's go to a break.
Let's do it.
All right, we're back from the break. This one from Keb Abbas on Twitter. Has any relegation left you as distraught as Leganés early in the week? And if so, why are you lying?
Oh, Leganés. Sid Lowe, we just mentioned that piece last time, but yeah.
Yeah, if anyone hasn't read Sid's piece from Leganés on the weekend, it's on The Guardian, go and read it. I mean, Sid is consistently one of... I mean, we've talked about Sid before, I mean.
Yep, yeah.
But yeah, this is one of Sid's best, I think.
We need to do like a Sidio podcast where we get him on the Stadio podcast.
Yeah, we'll have to do that in Madrid though, unfortunately.
That's true.
What a shame. Leganés, the hardest hit city in Spain, COVID-19. It meant a lot. They shouldn't have been there anyway. The fact that they were in La Liga for 4 years is such an overachievement. And the way in which they went down, their two top scorers taken away in the transfer window in January, loads of injuries. And in the end, it came down to a handball decision that should have been given. Utterly heartbreaking, I think.
Horrific.
There was a great line in Sid's piece, actually, that was a little bit reminiscent to one of our favourites, The Curse of El Pupas, where it said, Iago Aspas said, this can never happen again. Basically, Celta escaping so narrowly. And then the next sentence was, he said the same thing last year.
Oh, my God. Iago Aspas saved. I mean, he saves them every year, doesn't he?
Yeah, but Celta shouldn't be down there.
No.
They shouldn't be down there. The amount of money they spent this season, and like you would have thought last year was a wake-up call for them to go down, but you think there weren't any celebrations after the final whistle at the Celta game because they knew that they'd really got away with it.
Every league has a Werder Bremen, doesn't it? Every league's got a club which is too big to be down there, but they haven't got things together either at board level or on the pitch or both. And they just shouldn't be languishing like that. You know, it's hard to root for clubs like that sometimes over clubs that have basically maximised everything and just gotten lucky. You know, Leganés, the way they set up everything, they didn't go beyond their means. They had like Martin Brathwaite, who was outstanding and who got a lot of stick when he went to Barca, but was brilliant for them.
Yeah, he did a job. I mean, they do, to be fair to Barcelona, they do have a really good habit. It's like, you know, when you see NBA teams signing vets for the playoffs.
Yes.
Barcelona have got that kind of vibe about them sometimes.
You know, well, I'll be honest and say, can I be this right? I'm going to sound like someone from The Wire or one of these like cop shows. Barca haven't been Barca for a while.
Well, Musa, actually, it's funny you said that because my first piece for The Ringer was kind of touching on that topic.
Oh my goodness. The circle of life.
After the most recent Clásico.
Yeah.
But yeah, their identity has been blown to bits. We've talked about this a million times. I mean, we said the other day that we were maybe going to do an end of season report on some teams around Europe once the Premier League wraps next week and Serie A wraps. So let's maybe hold that for that because we did that big thing on Barca. Well, we didn't do a massive thing on Barca, but we touched on Barca's problems a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Now they're talking about potential bankruptcy, which I don't think will actually ever happen because I think Barcelona have been teetering on the edge of financial ruin for about a decade now, weirdly. They just can't seem to get it right.
You know, it's so weird though. Barca have become Real on and off the field, even in relation to the financial stuff. And this is going to hurt to say that. But do you remember when like Real had that massive, massive threat, the looming bankruptcy, then they sold that training ground for like $250 million?
Handy.
Next time in Barcelona, I'll identify a strip of land, maybe a parking lot. And maybe if the city can buy that for like €500 million, Barca back in business.
There you go.
You know.
Let's move on to another one. I like this one from Ben Pummel. It's said, who are the most high-profile anti-catfish players in as much as their talent is disproportionately massive compared to their profile due to limitations at their current clubs? Said Mane at Southampton, for example, was an anti-catfish player. Richarlison's quiet brilliance at Everton brought it into my mind. I like this question.
Santi Cazorla at Malaga.
Oh, are we going like historic here?
I mean, Magico Gonzalez at Cadiz. I mean, if we're going like, okay, we're going current. Okay, so that's the kind of headspace I'm going with. So if we're going at current, it's that player who always scores. If there's like a 4-2 defeat, it's the player that always scores the two, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Quagliarella at Sampdoria.
Drink. Is our Samp mention?
Yeah, okay.
I'm going to throw in Danny Parejo at Valencia.
Okay, oh yeah, oh gosh, of course, yeah, he's been that guy for ages.
Yeah, he's a anti-catfish stalwart.
I mean, do you know what I love about this question? It's kind of a sly, like, who's the most underrated? When I saw it, I was like, oh, that's actually a catfish question.
Well, there you go. I mean,
the question
let's throw
itself,
in, let's,
the question
let's throw in Marcel Sabitzer. He can go in there, Marcel Sabitzer, although he's, like we've mentioned before, he's straying desperately close to Firmino territory.
Yeah, most underrated that everyone actually rates.
Yeah.
It's like, no one rates them. No one's talking about this band. Everyone's talking about this band. Oh no, they can't get mentioned. Do you know what? We've actually done the Google printouts. We've looked at social media impressions. Everyone is talking about this band.
Let's move on to another question.
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
From Nate Ashburn. He said, why does it seem like we're getting second year Jose only 6 months in?
Theory. Radiation. You know, like this thing, and you study like the half-life.
So I thought you were singing Nuclear War by Sun Ra then. When you push that button.
When Jose goes off, nuclear war. Actually, nuclear war is a really appropriate thing to talk about. I remember studying years ago in science about how things deteriorate with radiation, and there's that half-life, and the half-life is if it accelerates, keeps halving. And his career is like that. Like the time towards breakdown keeps accelerating. You could probably model it mathematically over the course of Mourinho's career, how quickly the meltdown arrives. Let's not forget, this is the guy that didn't lose a home game
forever
for what, 8 seasons? And now it's like, the thought of Mourinho losing a home game was, it was news. It was like football news when he lost the home game. And the meltdowns have accelerated. Like, it's almost as if Mourinho's career has been modeled by an algorithm patterned against the deterioration of like radioactive material. It was actually quite fitting because a lot of his behavior has been quite radioactive. This is the thing about Mourinho and Guardiola. You know, when you've got those young actors that are like firebrands, you know, the De Niro, Pacino, and if you don't make the pivot to comedy quickly enough, you become a parody. So you start shouting and no one's scared anymore. Like when Pacino used to shout, it was always terrifying. And then when he shouted, it became like hoo-ha and it became a parody. Do you remember that?
I think what I would say is you look at someone like Robert Redford.
Yes.
Brilliant actor, never really fucked with the comedy thing, but moved out of it into really interesting
Alex Ferguson.
Elder
Alex
roles.
Ferguson. He got rid of the hairdryer.
Arsene Wenger.
Got rid of the hairdryer.
Yeah, Arsene Wenger just walked away, started directing.
Yeah. That's it.
Literally. Yeah, oh my God.
It's exactly that. Or you have like, or someone like Marcello Lippi, who's basically your Brad Pitt.
Yeah, he set up the studio. Yeah, Marcello Lippi basically went and set up the studio and funded films by people who wouldn't get their films
exactly
made.
And then basically retreated to kind of executive producer role, but every now and again would step in and actually do the coaching and then just ducked out. So Marcello Lippi is basically Brad Pitt. Mourinho is Al Pacino. Pep is still De Niro trying to go full Taxi Driver, but it's not that scary anymore. Wenger and Ferguson are both Redford. Actually, no. Wenger's Christopher Walken, actually, in so many ways. Like, even when he is not top of the bill, he's still box office and he's still the dude everyone watches. And he's still the guy. If Christopher Walken was at any Hollywood party, everyone would run over or move over as quick as they could to listen to all his anecdotes. Like, you imagine Wenger just sitting there. You know, Christopher Walken is probably that guy that just goes to like a Hollywood party or event if he actually turns up, and just everyone just listens to all his anecdotes.
Yeah.
And they're genuinely hilarious and everyone just listens for 20 minutes on end. That's Wenger with a glass of red wine. And like, you have like Arteta running to fill it up again for him.
Yeah, well, Arteta is like, well, in that kind of scenario, he's like the Timothy Chalamet.
Oh, I like that a lot. This is so much fun.
The hot young hope.
Have we suddenly gone into like football managers as actors?
Okay. Well, we need to save this and do a podcast.
Do you know what?
It.
But before I go any further, just to sort of put a stamp on it, really, in terms of a conversation, there is a really interesting thing about the arcs of actors and managers. Because if you think about it, you know, we mentioned Jessica Chastain earlier, shout out to her. If you think about it, they're both performers, right? There is performers. Mm. Maybe we're circling around this topic without realizing it for a few weeks now, but even the dress code, since you started mentioning it, and watching Pep's dress code in certain games. And now he's almost like beach dad in the last game against Watford. He was almost like sort of distracted dad on a beach with the kids. Like there's all these. So when you are, if you're an actor and a manager, you're on stage for a certain range of amount of time and everyone's watching, scrutinizing you. There's a moment when you've got to think to yourself, what is my next performance? What can I do next? What can I perform next? And you've got people like, you know, Del Bosque is a kind of Philip Seymour Hoffman, just always there in the background, always empathetic, always gentle, never taking the limelight, but always somehow stealing the show, like always somehow doing it. I mentioned the kind of analogy almost as a joke, but there's also a serious point, which is that when you are on stage that long, that often as an actor or as a manager, and every season offers you a new role, how do you keep the audience captivated? It's the constant challenge. Mm-hmm. And it's the kind of thing that you would sit down, like I'm sure that Klopp would sit down with his assistant and not just talk tactics, but he'd like, what do I do differently this year? What do I say in press conferences this year? What do I do to motivate? What do I do to excite? How often do I lose my temper? When do I go into a press conference and just lose it?
See, I disagree actually with Klopp. I think Klopp is a...
Feel.
He's basically improv. That's why he is so bad when he loses games, because he can't fake that. I think Pep has his Pepisms.
Okay.
And Mourinho is obviously, like Mourinho has got to the point now when he thinks that he's still trying to say lines that he was saying back in the day, but they're, like you said before, they're just a parody. It would be like, I'm trying to think, what's the most, like one of the most terrifying lines that you've ever heard in a movie?
Call it, friendo. No country for old men. Anton Chigurh, when Anton Chigurh basically says to the guy, call it, and the guy's tossing a coin for his life. That's the most terrifying.
Yeah. Imagine doing that almost 20 years later.
Like, call it.
After knowing that that person the whole time, you'd be like, whatever, mate. I've seen you in a gilet. You don't scare me.
Oh my goodness. Mourinho, if you look at the beginning of No Country for Old Men, Anton Chigurh is terrifying and all-consuming.
That's year one Chelsea Mourinho.
Yeah, and the final scene of No Country for Old Men is trending towards Mourinho now.
Yeah, we need to do an episode on
this.
Let's
do it. Let's do it. We'll come back to it.
All right. This one from Kid Presentable. With the trend of ex-players taking over as managers, Arteta, Lampard, Zidane, Solskjaer, etc., what club needs an ex-player takeover and who would that ex-player be? And he said, obviously, Xavi to Barcelona doesn't count.
Xabi Alonso to Sociedad.
Ooh la la.
Now that...
Xabi Alonso to succeed either Zidane or Klopp, but whichever one leaves first.
Oh my goodness. Neither of those people going anywhere. I was actually looking at, I'm actually writing a piece for The Ringer about this, but I was looking at the records of, a funny thing has happened in Serie A, La Liga and the Premier League, which is that this year, the teams in the lead have got significantly less potent attacks than the teams in second. So Atalanta just firing on all cylinders in second place at the moment. Juve, a little bit more frugal at the top. Liverpool, I basically call it sort of calm control, and Madrid, an extreme version, I think, what, scored 70, conceded 25. And really the lesson being in those leagues, play with control, everyone else is losing their heads, keep yours. So those clubs, those jobs are secure. I think Xabi Alonso to Sociedad is the most exciting of those to me, because they ended up sixth, I think, and they faded a bit. But I think that the return of a legend like Alonso would galvanize new signings and galvanize existing players. Like he could bring in players. And I think he's a really smart, like you hear him talk football, he's like, you know.
Well, I mean, he's there at the youth team.
So I think
right?
If he got the job there, and that's probably something which has been mooted already, then that would be incredible. And they've got so many incredible pieces and young pieces at Sociedad.
He's actually at Real Sociedad B.
Right.
He was coaching the Real Madrid under 14s before that. That's why I got.
Right. So that's that's the standout appointment. That would be incredible.
I would like to suggest Poch to PSG.
Oh my goodness.
Because why not?
Or if we're going to be really dramatic, Poch gets a load of investment, and they invest in Espanyol and Pochka.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Newell's.
Poch goes to Espanyol and just goes and does really exciting things with the existing players. And then they get big investment and they come in back to La Liga and start just tearing it up.
You're going to start hearing about power shifts in Barcelona.
Power shifts, yeah, exactly.
The more romantic side of it would be Newell's or Bordeaux, I think, because he's already done Espanyol.
Bordeaux
would be lovely.
Zidane to Cannes.
Ah! Zidane to Juve, actually.
Oh my goodness. Does he love Juve like that?
Mm.
He seems to love Madrid so much.
Yeah, I mean, he's Madrid through and through, huh? Not that he's had any managerial experience, but just because I want to see him on the touchline in a suit. Robert Pires to Marseille.
Oh my goodness. That's the most handsome appointment.
City, club, stadium, manager.
And that Marseille stadium is gorgeous. The sound.
No, it's beautiful.
The sound,
yeah.
The architecture.
Mm.
So I just had a random thought about Zidane. Zidane, Figo, Beckham and Ronaldo, they're mates. They go for dinner. Do they sit there? Here's a quick question. When Zidane, Beckham, Figo and Ronaldo go for dinner or hang out as they do, as they must, so I like to imagine it, do they just sit there and look at each other and just be like, we are absolute dons? Like, do they actually, that amount of energy, there's that Instagram post, there's an Instagram photo, and you got like Del Piero, Kaka, and they're like, do they look around at each other and be like, look at this energy, look at this pure.
Wow.
Does that swag, that level, they must do that. And it can't be disputed.
If I was in that group, every single Instagram picture I'd post with us four,
of course,
would just say, what? That's the only caption.
There's nothing that can be said.
Whatever it is, no.
Dude, it reminds me of...
Because there's just nothing. It's like the ultimate mic drop. Stuff like that, when you're in a crew that deep.
It's so deep. Can I just be... I mean, I've said this maybe before, but who... If you post that on your Insta, let's say there's four of you that run the joint Insta and you're just a gang and like someone else uploads your pictures on the holidays. It's like the four of you, Beckham, Ronaldo, Zidane, Figo, the four of you are just like rolling deep.
Now that's a flat cap gang.
It's a flat cap gang. I want to know, my one question is this. Who is the footballer who sends the DM, the needy DM on Instagram going, guys, I know the four of you have got your thing, but I just kind of felt like over the years I feel a bit like we could be, like, why am I not in the, you know, I don't want to ask.
It's 100% Michael Owen.
technically I was a Galactico. He'll say,
guys, I won the Ballon d'Or when I was Yeah, but Michael, they're like, guys, we're watching movies. You don't watch movies. So well, that's why you're not in the gang, Michael. You've only seen Jurassic Park or something stupid.
And the worst thing is the existence of the gang and you're not in it, because then you're like, you're seeing, and everyone's been, hey guys, like, hey, what? I just saw this picture on Instagram. You're not, I just would have thought that you
are.
Yeah, like,
I'm just down the road.
Guys, like, I just...
You mean all four of you were in Chester and you didn't call me?
Oh, can I be honest with you, Ryan? I'm going to reveal... Once on this podcast, I reveal a flash of ego. One reason I want to be like a successful writer one day is
get a load of this guy.
What I've realized is, like, you know, obviously starting out as a football writer like 15 years ago, I don't want these, I hope people don't listen to this podcast whose work I really admire. There are some football writers who I grew up absolutely adoring, right? And then as you make more work, you end up getting to know them. And like, the better you get at what you do, your reward for it is meeting the people you really admire. And I think part of me as an artist is wanting to get better so that people I really admire can look at my stuff and be like, I like what you're doing. Keep it up. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I like what you're doing.
So you want to be in a fun WhatsApp group with all of your peers?
Yeah.
And your heroes?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
I just want everyone to leave me the fuck alone. That's why I started a football podcast. Oh, stop tweeting me about Rolnex. Let me live. Okay, so I'm going to end on this one because the news broke on Tuesday night that Ralf Rangnick's move to AC Milan is off. And we had a question from Talking Spheres on Twitter. Have Milan made a mistake in not giving Rangnick what he desires? Now, this is a weird situation, I think. And I wonder if finance has come into this. Mark Kozica, who is Rangnick's boy released a statement saying that AC Milan and Ralf Rangnick have agreed that it is not the right time at the moment and that there is no momentum for working together. Because of this, and taking into account the good development and the results under coach Stefano Pioli, it was decided jointly that Ralf Rangnick will not take on a role at AC Milan. So, for context, Pioli had a contract until the end of the 2021 season. I believe they're still paying Giampaolo from October when they fired him. They would have had to pay Red Bull for getting Rangnick, because he's still in a role at Red Bull. They would have had to pay out Pioli while still paying Giampaolo. So I kind of think this makes sense, actually.
I mean, it's funny. My first gut reaction was, did they blink? But then, I mean, James Horncastle, who's vastly more experienced in these matters, writes The Athletic about Italian football, was like, he thought it was the right shout, and he's a closer observer of that scene, vastly closer than I am. And look, there's something to be said for the players are happy, there's momentum, and Milan are looking for the first time in years like their old selves again. That has been remarked on by a lot of long-time observers of Milan. Like, the first time about 10 years, Milan look good. And if you got Rangnick in against the players' wishes, they were happy in a system. Not the players would throw in the towel, but almost like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I have seen comments about Ibrahimovic providing a lot of goals. And that's maybe, you know, there's maybe been a reliance on him, a dependency on him. But I also think a really good coach, I mean, look at like, you know, Solskjaer is, you know, he's shown his chops. They got rid of Lukaku and they brought in Greenwood and they look great. Like, if you bring in a couple of good recruits and trust Pioli to bring the best out of new arrivals, it could work out. And it's been extended to 2022. Part of me just thinks maybe it's just good getting a club back to itself again. And here's weird, another thing as well with the Rangnick thing, that ramps up the pressure on a club that's just getting back on its feet.
I mean, there was some stuff that Ivan Gazidis said about it where it wasn't just a thing based on recency. It was something that had been grown. And a lot of players have actually said that, not putting pressure, but I think there were a lot of noises about players being unhappy if Pioli was to go. So I think it makes a lot of sense. The Rangnick thing feels a little bit forced. It felt a little bit at the time like when Gazidis brought Sanye in at Arsenal and that kind of team. It was a bit of a move like that. But then they extended Pioli's contract as well. So AC Milan need consistency and they need patience and they need space to grow. And I think you're right. Like, putting something like Rangnick in there changes the dynamic almost overnight and could potentially undo a lot of that hard work. They're not exactly fixed, but they're not as broke as they were.
Right. And they look, I mean, Frank Kessié has looked outstanding since the restart. You know what I say as well? One thing Milan, I think, really need now, and this is a big thing, it's a bugbear I've had for years with them. Take the shirt back to the broad stripes. The red and black stripes on that shirt are too thin. They're too close together.
I think they have varied, though, over the years.
90s, Mediolanum. That was the peak.
Lotto Milan. Or the very, very, very early Adidas ones were very, very smooth.
Yeah.
Should we get out of here?
Let's do it.
Thanks to everyone who sent in questions. And we hope you're all staying safe and well. We will be back on Monday.
Yep.
We're at Stadio on Twitter, at Stadio Football on Instagram. Website is stadio.football, but make sure you check theringer.com/soccer. We're playing out this week on, I think it's pronounced Cybe, C-Y-B-E. Tune's called Zen Zai, out on the brilliant Strom label out of Belgium. If you like weird stuff, go and check out Strom. Anything you want to add, Musa? Here we go.
Just, I'd like to add, or I hope this podcast episode adds a little bit more happiness to sometimes a troubled universe. And I hope also that...
Wow, aim low.
I hope you also have joyful days. Joyful days wherever you are. That's just me with the good energy.
One day I'm going to say anything to Adboost and you're just going to be like, live, laugh, love.
Yeah.
And I'm going to cancel you.
Promises.
Ryan Hunt and Musa Okwonga have parted ways on Creative Differences.
Creative Differences.
Take care, everyone. Have a great weekend and the rest of the week, and we'll see you Monday.
See ya.